call the Legislative Coordinating Commission meeting to order November 16th, 2009. We have a full agenda members to move through, and I think we can do this in a pretty organized fashion here. So, let's see, we're going to review the minutes first, and I'm just taking a look here. Representative Holberg, can you review these minutes quickly? You were present.
Sure, so moved.
All right. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. So the first thing, Mr. Hubinger, would you like to come to the table? We need to review and approve the LCC legislative plan for employee benefits and policies.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the LCC. The first item on your agenda today is a set of proposed changes to the legislative plan for employee benefits. This is the plan that establishes insurance benefits and sick and leave policies and other personnel policies that apply across the legislature. Some of these provisions are effective when the LCC approves them, including the insurance and vacation and sick leave provisions. Other provisions are effective when they are adopted by the House and the Senate Rules Committees. These proposed changes have been developed by a staff group consisting of staff from the House and the Senate and the joint offices. Their names are listed on the summary that we provided a couple of weeks ago to you electronically and is included in your folder today. There's also a copy of the proposed benefit book with the changes shown in legislative format. In the summary, I've grouped the changes into three categories. One summarizes the changes that were made to conform to changes in state and federal law or with changes negotiated in the contracts with state employees. A second category relates to changes that are proposed by the staff group to meet the business needs of the legislature. And the third category relates to technical and changes and clarifications. My intention would be to just focus on the more significant changes that are being proposed. Mm-hmm. Under conforming changes, the first area relates to personnel records. This is a section that's proposed to be added in the book to provide basic information to employees about their legal rights to access their personnel records under state law. The second proposed change relates to sick leave for certain veterans. This language appears on page 19 of the benefit book. This provision in our benefit book is a result of session law that passed in 2009 that provides up to 40 hours of sick leave for employees who are veterans who have a service-related disability. Also relating to leave for members of the military, on page 2 of the summary now, there are two provisions that relate to unpaid leave for those in military service. These are leaves that parallel changes in federal law that were adopted earlier this year. The first provides leave of up to 12 weeks for an employee with a family member in the military who was called to active duty. The second leave is longer, up to 26 weeks. 26 weeks is for an employee who has a member of the family in the military who has been injured or who has a serious illness as a result of service in active duty. The benefit here is that although the leave is unpaid, the employer will continue to pay the insurance premiums. There were also several changes in the insurance chapter in the benefit book, none of them very significant, and they follow the changes that were negotiated by the state and its employee unions. Unlike most years, there are a few significant changes, as I said. The plan design and the co-pays are unchanged. There are some reductions in the co-insurance provisions in Tier 4. The contributions by both employees and by the state agencies and the legislature will remain at the same levels in calendar year 09 as they were in calendar year 10. CGIP, the State Employee Group Insurance Plan, will use reserves funds to make up the difference between actual costs and the premiums that are paid. Minnesota Management and Budget, which manages this program, estimates that premiums will increase by 6.5% or so in calendar year 11. In the second category of changes, those changes that are proposed by our staff group, the first relates to advances of emergency sick leave. This comes out of the discussions that the pandemic flu staff group that consists of staff from the House and the Senate and the joint agencies have been meeting somewhat irregularly over the last year and a half about pandemic flu, and then more consistently lately with the H1N1 outbreak. We are proposing some greater flexibility for appointing authorities, the House, the Senate, and the LCC, to adopt interim policies for sick leave use, to advance sick leave for employees who are sick or who have family members who are. But we give this flexibility to the three appointing authorities. And the use of that policy and the amount would be determined by each appointing authority. The other significant change suggested by staff relates to the high deductible insurance plan. You may have heard that Minnesota Management and Budget was required under some 2008 legislation to develop a high deductible health savings account option for state employees. They were required to provide this option beginning next year to employees who are covered under the managerial and commissioners plan, about 2,500 employees out of the state employee workforce of 50,000. Because our insurance chapter is closely associated with the commissioners plan, legislative staff and members are potentially eligible to participate in this option beginning in January. After some review and a lot of discussion, the staff group is recommending that the legislature not participate in this option in calendar year 10 for two reasons. First, the human resources offices in the House and the Senate and the LCC didn't believe that they had sufficient information to respond to inquiries about this new option that our employees may bring to them. Second, because especially the House and the Senate have separate accounting systems, it's unclear how funds would be moved from the House and the Senate to the financial institutions that are serving as the investment arms for these new accounts. And we thought that until that was worked out, the legislature should not participate. Instead, we recommend that the legislature wait and participate in 2011. There's a technical amendment to implement that suggestion in your folders. Then there's a whole category of changes that are technical clarifications to make the book more easy to understand for our employees or to correct some minor errors. Madam Chair, that's a quick run-through of the changes. Okay. I'd like to answer any questions.
Representative John Key.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the veterans issues, I have a question, not on what you've put in here, but how you would handle. And we've had discussion on this in committee, and I thought we'd actually put something into statute, but maybe not. More often than not, employees now will need a day or two or three off. We've had a lot of deployments and a lot of returns to the state from, I think, over 10,000 troops and counting. And whether you're a spouse or a parent of a soldier or a sibling, it's pretty important to attend those deployment ceremonies, and that would be a time off of work. Does the House have a policy on that allowing? And some of these deployments might go out of Oklahoma, or they might go out of points beyond Minnesota where you'd have to be gone 2 or 3 days. But obviously, I think we all understand the importance of being there as your loved one is shipped overseas for a year. And consequently, when they come back, how you want to be there when they get off the bus a year later. So how would the House handle that request from an employee? Would they be allowed to use sick time? And if they've used all their sick time, could they do unpaid leave at that point, too, to get them to that ceremony? I think that's important. I know we've talked about in committee, and I thought we had put something in general state law pertaining to it, but I'm not sure we have yet.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, my understanding is that an employee would need to use the unpaid leave of up to 12 weeks for – there's some interesting federal language about qualifying exigency arising out of their deployment. And so they would use that leave, which is unpaid, but they would continue to receive insurance for that period. I know it sounds like it's short from what you said about attending a deployment event, but that is my understanding.
And as long as it's clear, because I'm reading your severance and not paid leave, and I know it's 12 weeks, but I'm not sure. For veterans with a service-related disability, I'm not sure if it describes the actual employees or if it's describing the veteran that needs it. I mean, I understand you're the veteran in need.
I think we have a...
Okay.
Mr. Pender.
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, on page 2 of the memo that was provided with the book, that might be the easiest way to see it. Paragraph, the numbered paragraph 4 there, it has two different kinds of leave, A and B, and the A is is unpaid leave of up to 12 weeks for an employee with a service member in the military who's called to active duty. So that's what's in here that addresses that issue. It is unpaid leave, but it is designed for the employee who has a family member who's been called to active leave.
And, Madam Chair, then the last question is, and I'll look to see that language is in here, too. I didn't see it exactly that way. But, it can be non-consecutive also. It doesn't have to be a consecutive 12 weeks. I mean, again, I'm talking about these are split opportunities to go be with your family member, and they're not consecutive. So is that would be kosher, too, to say, well, I'm going this week, and then 9 months later saying, you know, the soldier's returning, I'm leaving now too, so it's not a consecutive leave. It's just cumulative during the year.
Mr. Pender.
Madam Chair and Representative Junkie, that would be correct. It's the leave that starts in the book language here at the bottom of page 28 and going on to page 29, and it lists qualifying exigencies as short notice deployments, military events and related activities, child care and school activities, and quite a list of other kinds of things there that would qualify for it.
Thank you.
Yep. Other questions? Otherwise, we'll move to, we have a number of amendments that need to be moved. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Huberger, does any of these changes affect the employees' pensions?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, no.
Good.
Okay. Members at the back, Senator Metzen, President Metzen, I'm sorry that I called you representative. That's just...
I did that for a while, too. Okay. I don't know if you want to look at the recommendations that HR and others have pulled off in that high deductible for a year. Is it appropriate not to move that? Or?
We have the LCC-1, which would put that in. Right. So it's at the back. It's right there.
We discussed this before, and I think that makes sense to...
So, Senator Metzen moves LCC 1. Any discussion to LCC 1, which is the implementation, the high deductible plan and health savings account for offered in 2011? Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Is adopted. Okay, we have LCC 2, salary savings leave. Would like to move that? Representative Surridge moves. LCC 2. Mr. Huberger?
Madam Chair, members, this amendment would affect the salary savings leave. The strikeout of the paragraph C at the bottom was included in the draft of the benefit book that was distributed earlier, but we caught too late in the process a reference earlier in that paragraph to calendar years, and the statute refers to fiscal years or biennium, so we suggest the change at the beginning of that paragraph.
Any discussion to LCC 2? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. And let's see. There's a policy on donated time.
Madam Chair, that's a separate policy.
A separate policy, all right. Right. Any other amendments to the benefit? Otherwise, we'll take a motion to adopt. All right. We'll say that we had a motion to adopt by Representative Surridge. All those in favor, please
aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. All right. Benefit book adopted. All right. Let's see. Thank you, Mr. Huberger, and thank you to everyone who worked on reviewing that for the House and Senate and LCC. I know a lot of time and effort and the administration went into the discussion around that. So So next we have the review and approval of financial audit for 2008. And I know we have some guests with us. Would you come to the table? You're there already. All right. Introduce yourselves.
Sure. Madam Speaker, members, my name is Diane Henry Wagenstein. I serve as the Assistant State Director with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. And with me is Steve McDonald. He's a managing partner with Abdo, Eck, and Meyer. The LCC had a fiscal year audit done in 2008. We do this every 2 years, similar to the House and the Senate. Start off the process, we issued a RFP, a request for proposal. Announcement was posted to the State Register. We had two respondents to our RFP, and we decided to go with Abdo, Eck, and Myers. We both worked with both firms in the past, and we've worked with Abdo in the past as well. So, Steve is going to talk a little bit more about the audit report in detail, but I just want to take this opportunity to recognize the service and the work efforts from the fiscal service staff. That's Denise Jobe and Sandy Harmon back there. It's due to their daily efforts that this process went smoothly. So I'll leave it to Steve then.
All right.
Well, and I concur with that, and also to Diane, too. I thought the preparation for the audit itself was really top-notch. Good response to all the items that we asked for, and it's a good reflection on staff, I think. Basically, what we do is give an opinion on your financial statements. By the time that we're done, we have to be able to say they're materially correct, and appropriate note disclosures are contained in the report. But we met that objective, so we gave an unqualified or clean opinion on the audit. Another big part of the audit process is the review or consideration of internal controls. It's an important part of planning our audit. And as we go through that process, anything that would come up in the way of findings or difficulties, we've got to let you know about that. And we didn't report any significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. So, again, good outcome. Anything else that would have come up in the audit, new accounting standard changes, difficulties, problems, those kind of things, we'd have to let you know about that as well. And our required communications to you is basically a clean boilerplate letter. So, again, nothing unusual or out of the ordinary to report that thing. So from the audit standpoint, I believe we met our objectives in a pretty timely, efficient manner.
Any discussion to the audit?
Thank you.
Senator Metzen.
Usually, for most of these reports I've seen, there's usually some deficiencies or weaknesses, and articulated usually in the back couple of pages, but we have to correct it. I guess I don't see any here.
Mr. McDonald.
I mean, give us a very clear, clean audit.
And I'd also point out, too, that we're under a bit tougher audit standards in this audit. The level of performance increased, and it required more detailed description of your entity-level controls and all the way down through your operational controls. We looked at them pretty close, so I feel pretty good about saying there isn't any there.
Very good report.
All right. Well, thank you for the report. I don't think we have to have any action to adopt the report. Thank you for the report, and thank you to the staff for their work on the report.
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Hubinger, back up again to review and approve the operating budgets for 10 and 11.
Madam Chair and members, in your folders is a one-page sheet that shows the appropriations for the joint legislative offices for the current biennium, fiscal year 10 and 11. These appropriations were included in the state government finance appropriations bill, the same bill that provided appropriations for the Senate and the House. The joint agencies had the same treatment as the House and Senate, with a 3% reduction for 10 and 11 from the base in 09. And those reductions were allocated evenly across all of the offices in the LCC. You'll also see that there are some one-time appropriations on the bottom third of the page from the legacy amendment for various funds to the LCC to develop an accountability website. There's also an appropriation from that same legislation for $695,000 to the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. And the LCC also received some one-time money from the Telecommunications Access Fund of $100,000 each year to do a pilot project on web captioning that we're working on.
Discussion to the joint budget. Representative Junkie.
The only discrepancy I see, and I just want a brief explanation, do you know why the LCCMR budget goes from 615 to 639 the second year? All the others seem pretty consistent that they're the same year to year, whether it's a library or, everything above. It's exactly the same. All the operating funds, general operations for the LCC, et cetera. But this is the only one that escalates. Why?
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie. Actually, the LCCMR receives a single biennial appropriation of one amount, and this is how they've chosen to split that amount up. Their overall budget was, Susan Thornton is here, but I think it was about 2% less for this biennium compared to the previous.
And, well, my only concern, Madam Chair, is I guess what came to mind right away was whether or not they were giving salary increases. That's become a very sensitive issue. I serve on other boards, and with the state employees not taking increases, for example, I serve on AURI Board of Directors, where we have a lot of professionals, scientists, and others who we feel compelled to give a raise to, but the board at this point has said no because of what's going on. So I just want to make sure that the LCCMR isn't planning on raises or compensation changes the second half of the year. Maybe it's a larger travel budget that year or something. I'm just trying to understand what it is.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Representative Junkie, there are no funds made available in any of these budgets for salary increases.
Do you want to hear from Ms. Thornton?
Well, what's the increase?
Just the way they've decided to divide it sounds like. Ms. Thornton.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie and members, Susan Thornton with the LCCMR staff. And we do, as Mr. Hubinger pointed out, we do budget for the biennium, first year, second year, depending on the level of member activity and travel and so forth, which is a different ranges depending on the year that we're in. We do have traditionally put in an amount for potential for salary increases pending a decision and direction of the LCC. Those dollars return to the trust fund if no increases are provided. So I do not anticipate we will be having increases within the budget.
Ms. Thornton, I think that Representative Junkie's question is more to the, and I'm sorry if I missed it in what you were saying, but the division, the division between the dollar amounts is not equal, unlike, I think, every single other budget area here.
You go from 615 to 639 the second year. Why? Isn't it equal each year?
Madam Speaker, members, it is, we do have a placeholder in there if there was to be a designated salary increase. So yes, it is in there, but that's all subject to if there is LCC approval from that. We are down, as Mr. Hubinger said, did reduce our budget from the current or from last biennium. And then last biennium, our total was $1.27 million. This is about $1.2 million.
So, Ms. Thornton, that $19,000 represents a placeholder for potential salary increases. But I just want to be very clear about what your testimony is. If the LCC does not approve salary increases, then that will go back. Is it $24,000? I don't
know. Yeah.
It'll go back to the $24,000. It'll go back to the trust fund.
Madam Speaker, members, yes, it remains in the trust fund.
Okay. Representative Holberg.
I have a number of questions. I asked for the 08, 09 numbers, and I heard testimony that there was a reduction, and I'm looking at the comparative numbers that I was given, 08, 09 versus 10 and 11, and revisor, legislative auditor and commission, the library, pensions, all three LCC line items, and they all go up, and in some cases, quite a bit. So I'm not, I mean, like in the case of the Pensions Commission, we have 333,008, 332, and now we're at 509. So I'm not understanding why the, if we have testimony that everything's going down 3%, did I get a bad 0809 document?
And,
you know, or what?
And Representative Holbert, I don't have the 0809 document in front of me. I guess I think that we better have an explanation then. So, Representative Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Holbert, the numbers that I show for 08 and 09 are consistently less than for 10 and 11. One exception was, as you pointed out, the Pensions Commission, which received a new appropriation to hire an actuary to oversee the local pension funds. But our general fund appropriation was reduced by 3% by the 2009 legislature. I'd be glad to meet with you and look at what you have, which I think we sent you. So I'm perplexed why that would why there'd be that discrepancy.
Well, I am as well, and I was surprised at the amount of the increases. I don't like to approve budgets without having some context for them, so that's why I asked for the 0809 numbers to be able to look at this. And so I have concerns when all of those are going up.
I'd like to have copies made of what you have. So,
And then. There's a couple things that just relate to the 10-11 if we want to go there
sure,
while we're waiting for copies to be made. On this list, I didn't get any numbers for the the Healthcare Access Commission was flat. Those numbers were the same as 8, 9, 10, and 11, all flat. And I'm assuming that the Environmental Trust Fund, some of that is legacy amendment, so it's new, but I didn't get any numbers for the LCC MR, and I'm thinking that probably was in existence in 08, 09, so I don't know where those numbers were going. But are any of these numbers discretionary at this point? Do we as a group have any? You're asking us to approve a budget, but is the reality it's already all set in stone and it doesn't matter, or...
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Holbert, you're right in pointing out that these funds have already been appropriated, but there's a provision in the LCC statute that calls for the commission to approve operating budgets for the joint legislative offices. And for that reason, we bring it to you for your review and approval. Several of the lines are appropriated specifically by law. There are other areas where LCC could choose to reallocate the funds.
Okay, and if I might, the Planning and Fiscal Policy Commission and the Legislator Forum, could you explain to me what those are? I think I know, but I just want to be sure.
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Holbrook, there was an additional appropriation of one-time money for the Planning and Fiscal Policy Commission because it was thought that they'd be meeting more often to monitor the federal stimulus funds and other budget matters. That commission has an underlying budget of $2,000 a year, and it was thought that would be insufficient for the number of meetings that they were going to have. The Legislator Forum is a group of legislators that meets from Minnesota, North and South Dakota, and Manitoba once per year, and to discuss issues that cut across those jurisdictions. That the dues for that forum are $10,000 a year, and this pays for one of the 2 years from this biennium.
And if I might, was this legislator, maybe I need to back up. This 0809 document that I was given, is this what this organization approved last time around to meet their statutory requirements?
Madam Chair and Representative Holbrook, I believe the LCC approved operating budgets for the last biennium as well.
But, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Is this the document that they approve? I mean, I'm feeling like I got apples and oranges here, and I'm sorry for taking up people's time. Maybe we're not supposed to actually look at this stuff, but, I'm confused.
Well, Representative Holbert, I mean, I am looking at the date of that, and that does seem a bit, I don't know if that's when the LCC last approved a budget. It seems to be an odd date at the top of that for a budget approval, just based on the schedule that we're on right now, which is usually at close to the end of a calendar year when we're doing this. But maybe Mr. Hubinger can shed light. It says May 23rd, 2008.
And, Madam Chair, maybe at the same time, I am assuming there are some unallotments I'm at least familiar with on the 08-09 budget document, the capital restoration planning number, and I think there was some unallotments to that. So the unallotment may play into the 3% reduction, too, but I'm confused.
Madam Chair, Representative Hoberg, members, I just extracted this file from a larger spreadsheet, and I didn't go back to pull out the document that would have been presented to the commission 2 years ago, roughly. You're right, too, that the joint offices had an unallotment in December, like the House and Senate. I believe the House and Senate each unallotted $800,000.
I want to be very clear about this language. What we did is we voluntarily gave to the state general fund dollars from the legislative branch. It's very important that we're clear about that, because unallotment powers do not affect the legislative branch, nor the, therefore the LCC. I mean, keep going, Mr. Huminger. Is it a possibility that the May 23rd document is an actual dollar spent somehow versus approval?
Madam Chair, I believe that these are the actual appropriations.
Okay.
I'm not sure what drove the May 23rd date. I will have to go back and check that.
Okay.
Sure. Madam Chair.
Mr. President.
I don't think there's any great spikes here from 8, 9 to 10 and 11. You've got a couple of three things. I think are, Mr. Hubinger? Mr. Hubinger, a couple of not unusual, but new things are like the compensation study thing we did in 2008. We also did another thing, the range adjustment cost area. And then, of course, we had to put some money in for the restoration capital planning thing there. So that that accounts for $600,000-$700,000 right there in 2008, which a lot of us thought we had to do those things. So that was kind of an unusual year for four or five of these items. So if you take those out, looks like we're in pretty good shape from what we were at 08 and 9 to 10 and 11, in my opinion.
Mr. Hubinger?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzen puts his finger exactly on the issue that I had forgotten, and Ms. Timmons also pointed it out. Several of the lines below that break for a compensation study and rate adjustments, those amounts were reallocated to the various offices to pay for salary increases that were approved in the last biennium. If you look at the total for the general fund for 08-09, $16,010,000 in 08 and $15,943 in 09, and compare that to the total general fund in 9 and in 10 and 11, you'll see that our general fund appropriation is actually going down.
Well, Representative Holbert.
Madam Chair, and that's fine, but if you look at the line items of a number of those items, they should have been one-time spending, not base adjustments as well. So, I mean, you can say if you take your general fund, and if that's where you're getting your 3%, that you went down from your total general fund number, maybe that's where you're getting your 3%, but still I don't believe that many of these things should have ever been put in the base if they were one-time issues.
Well, Representative Holberg, I mean, I don't think a couple of these things are one-time issues. The issue of range adjustment costs and operating increase, to me, would indicate an ongoing commitment towards the operations. The other things you're seeing there definitely were, and the merit costs as well. I mean, I don't think those were one-time costs. They went into the base adjustment. I think people knew that when they were voting on that in the LCC 2 years ago.
Well, Madam Chair, when I read that it's a study, I don't believe that it...
No. It's not a study. It's the adjustment from the outcome of the study. The study was done. It's not cost for a study. It's that our legislative across the entire enterprise was studied by the National Conference of State Legislators. We were way behind in many, many areas, Representative Holberg. We were uncompetitive in keeping employees here. And so what happened is adjustments were recommended to make sure that salaries were kept in the competitive range. And as we're seeing again, because we're in a time of severe budget restrictions, people are not going to be getting increases around here again for another couple of years. And so every time that happens, we fall further behind, we become uncompetitive, and frankly, I'm very, very glad that this is the last meeting I am ever chairing in the legislature today, in the sense of this, that I want to stand up for the employees of these bodies and tell you that is why these changes were made. And so if you think that was a one-time cost, that's not. That is adjusting the base back to where it should for the fair compensation of our employees.
And Madam Speaker, that explanation is fine, but when you look at this and it says a study, it doesn't say adjustments, it says a study. And I'm not quibbling with whether employees deserve more money or whatever. I'm just from a pure dollars and cents analysis trying to figure out why, if we say we're having a 3% reduction, how these numbers work. That's all I'm trying to get to here.
And I think asking those questions are perfect, Representative Holberg, but I think there's some misunderstanding that that wasn't a study. That was the adjustment for employees. So I'm glad we have that cleared up. Representative Junkie.
Well, and to that point, it is confusing, and I think I understand it now, too, because, you know, frankly, from the reviser on down through the LCC employee subcommittee, all those are increases from 09. Now, Mr. Hubinger is saying those were the salary adjustments are showing up in this line now, even though the overall budget is less. I guess my only concern is those salary adjustments came prior to the governor's executive order for salary freezes or not. When, if it came before, then I'm understanding now why it's there. And that's really what we're looking for, is clarification on when these salary increases were approved. And they could have been done the year before our budgeting session and before the governor signed his executive order. And I guess that's the date I'm most curious in.
They were long before that, Representative Junkie.
Madam Speaker, I misspoke too. Senator, Representative Holberg, you're right. I think the confusion with me a little bit was the title, the compensation study.
And I think that was
I think we clarified that. It was a catch-up thing that I really supported for our employees because we were way behind. I think we have to pay our people. But I think this is a result of the compensation. And I misspoke for these two categories. I probably didn't on capital restoration because that was a new one-time thing. So I was right on that and half right on the other. But it was a catch-up thing, and that's why we did that. We had to do it to be, Madam Speaker, to keep pace with other agencies. So that's done with. We're over with that for a while.
Okay. So let's just review. Mr. Hubinger, there are no salary increases scheduled for LCC employees in the current year budget.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Anyone have further questions? Okay. You know, I just want to say for the record that I would have preferred that the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources have kept in the same vein as everybody else in terms of either split that or however they wanted to do that. It did seem to mislead everyone around the table a little bit about that. So I guess future note that, you know, we all understand that that's probably just going back to the trust fund, but it would be much clearer if it was somehow noted. Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair, one disadvantage that commission operates under compared to the other commissions and the House and Senate budgets for that matter is that budget is set very early in the odd-numbered session before generally the House and Senate have made determinations about their own operating budgets. And so for that reason, they allocate a placeholder, if you will, for compensation increases with the understanding that none of them would be granted unless approved by the LCC.
Okay. Representative Holberg, more questions on the budget.
No, I appreciate the information. I just think that in the future, when you're asking this group to approve budgets, it would be helpful to know what the group approved in the last round, kind of a line item comparative analysis. I don't know if I'll be here, but hopefully there's somebody here that cares about biennial to biennial spending and would want to see the trend line on that.
Noted.
Mr. Hubinger, great. All right, let's motion to adopt.
Also move.
All right, President Metzen makes the motion to adopt. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion prevails. All right, the budget is adopted. Let's see. The amendment on vacation leave and donation policy. The one I tried to put on the back.
Right. Chair and members.
If you can see it, it has bright pink on it, and it is not numbered. Adopted March 20th, 2007, revised blank 2009. Right, Mr.
Madam Chair, there was legislation passed during the last session that increased the amount of leave that a state employee could donate to another employee for their sick leave use for an employee that had exhausted their own leave. It used to be a maximum of 12 hours. The legislature changed that from 12 to 40 hours. The House and Senate Rules Committees, as I understand it, have already adopted this change, and we're proposing to adopt this change as well.
Okay. Any questions about this? Person Holbert.
Thank you. Madam Chair, is there a cost to this? Do you believe people will have less accrued time if they carry over or take cash out with them, or is there savings? Or
Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and Representative Holberg, there is a limited amount of vacation time that is lost at the end of the year. Most employees use enough of their vacation so they don't lose any, so that whatever they carry forward is within the cap that's allowed by our plan. So essentially what this does is shift use of vacation leave to use of sick leave by employees who have exhausted their sick leave banks.
So I think that, Representative Holberg, this is all earned time already, and the whole function of this is to help out a fellow employee. So I don't think there's any real, I mean, maybe there'd be a savings potentially upon separation from one of the bodies, that if their vacation time is reduced, the amount paid out on vacation could potentially be. But that's not really the whole point of the thing anyway. It's certainly not an added expense for the institutions based on the fact they're already earned hours. Somebody is owed them, so can't imagine that that's our effect here. Anyone have a testimony to? Yeah, okay. All right. Representative Holberg. Okay, someone like to move the adoption of this policy? Senator Clark. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and is adopted. Any other business? Any other business? All right, we are adjourned.
Thank you.